Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the Early Childhood Development Department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Yes.
Now, it's not often that you get a peek into someone's past, you know, and you learn what kinds of things shaped this person, what things made this boy the man he is today, for example.
And it's not often that you can see, when you do get a glimpse into the past, you can see how much of the future would have been predictable from what little you saw in the past.
Well, I don't know how these came into our possession, but I'm sure everyone knows that our technical editor is John Bugsy Lawler, and he's... the look I'm getting...
he just got it.
But I have in my possession letters that he... Every week we poke fun at his, how would you call it, interest in food, I suppose you'd have to say, right?
I mean.
Right. Deep, lifelong interest in food.
Like last week we talked about he was back from the Seneca Lake rump steak, sponge cake, milkshake, French flake, shake and bake.
Well, here I have in my possession some letters that he wrote to his mother when he was in camp.
He was nine years old. He was 9 years old, and they sent him to camp.
Yeah, I'll just read some excerpts. The first day was pretty good, but the second was lousy. Oh, I'm sorry, dear mom. The first day was pretty good, but the second was lousy. I don't want to stay another day. I suppose you don't want to stay 2 weeks because the food is lousy. I've been sick for the past 2 days, and I'm sick of it. The beds are uncomfortable. I can't stay a month.
These are real letters.
These are real letters written in his hand.
We wouldn't make this up.
Dear Mom, I love the place, but I want to come home. The suppers could be fed to pigs, and they'd complain. And here's one of the I guess he's ready to come home. It's the end of his sentence, his stay. I'm having a ball, but I want to be the first to leave so I can get home soon. If it's possible, can Daddy pick up a sob of watermelon and a nice juicy pizza and have it waiting for me when I get home? Your son, John. I mean, you can't make stuff like this up.
He signed one of these letters, "You're half crazy, son." Hey, we even know the name of the camp. Camp Cedar Crest.
Yes. Well, that was their last year in business. Well, oh,
okay.
God.
Hide these.
This will be on the website. But I do have some very cute pictures. Look at that. Isn't that a nice picture of Bugsy when he was just a boy?
Wow.
Yeah, and here he is in his birthday. So, well, that'll be on the website. That's for sure.
Wow.
If you'd like to call us about your car, or Bugsy for that matter, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Christo Jackson in Buford.
Christo?
Yes, sir.
In Buford? Buford what?
South Carolina.
Oh, South Carolina.
So what's going on?
I've got an 86 VW Golf that I've had for about 5 years.
Mm.
And after I'd had it for 2 years, it started to not start in the morning. And then I had a mechanic look at it, and he put a new fuel pump.
Right.
And he kept on putting in fuel pumps. And each time he put one in, it would work well for about 4 or 5 months. And then it would commence to not start. And what I would have to do is to get underneath the car with a hammer, hit the fuel pump, which, as you probably know, is right next to the gas tank, two or three times, run back, jump in the driver's seat, and crank it, and it would start right up. That
Great.
Used to work. But what happens now is that doesn't work. What I have to do is I have to get somebody else to sit in the driver's seat.
Oh, so while you're cranking.
And then, no, while he's cranking.
While he's cranking, you're hitting.
Oh, so you got it wrong. You should be cranking.
No.
It's his car. No stranger is going to lie on his back to do this.
At 7:15 in the morning when I leave for work, if the car doesn't start and I have to inflict myself on some poor passerby,
right.
I can't ask him to get under the car. I have him crank it while I hit the fuel pump, and it works perfectly. But this is not the way I want to run my life. And, you know, it's enough to make the good humor man angry.
Well, you've come to expect too much, Christo. I mean, which is true of all of us. I mean, we complain about everything. If the TV, I noticed the other, we have cable TV in the town where I live. And it has this wonderful feature. You turn on the TV and you press the information button. And at the bottom of the screen, you get a little typed up thing that tells you what's on. If it's a movie, it tells you who's in it. It tells you it starts at 7 and it ends at 9.
It goes by so quickly that you can't really tell.
So you have to press the info button four or five times, right.
In any event, it seems as though whoever produces these little subtitles doesn't want to work on the weekends. So that starting Friday, it doesn't work anymore. So
that's
Friday
right.
night, you can't tell what's on. Saturday all day and Sunday all day, you can't tell what's on. And then Monday, it all comes back. Why can't they get this simple thing straight? I'm sitting there.
See, I have watching. No such problem with my TV.
You're tiptoeing into the dizzy realms of metaphor. I'm wondering, can you relate this somehow to my golf?
I'm coming around to it. Here's the thing. I don't even realize what I'm getting. I'm sitting there on my sofa with this little device in my hand, and I'm pressing little buttons, and I'm changing stations, and I'm changing volume, and I'm doing all kinds of stuff, and I'm bent out of shape because one of the little features that they offered me doesn't work. Whereas I used to get only one station, and I had to get up from the seat and go over and turn a dial to get it. Now I've got all this wonderful luxury, and I don't appreciate it because I have come to expect it and
sure.
more. And you, the same way. I mean,
yeah,
so what? You get underneath. What if it was a horse?
So what you're saying is that unrealistic expectations are premeditated resentments.
You got it, man.
Okay.
Are you a psychiatrist?
What do I do?
How do you fix it?
There's no VW dealer in Buford.
Yeah.
And I've now put in four of these things, and the mechanic's been very nice.
Is he replacing them with original equipment pumps, Bosch pumps?
He's replacing it with things that are certified as being approved by VW.
Hmm.
Okay, well,
that means the connections match up.
Yeah. Well, it comes to mind that he's putting in inferior pumps. There are many companies that make a fuel pump for this car, which isn't up to snuff. And it may take exactly that amount of time, whatever it is, 100 days or whatever, for the thing to begin to fail. The other possibility, and the more likely one, is that you have a severe case of fuel system crudification.
Witchification?
Crudification.
Could you spell that?
C-R-U-D.
Oh, crud. Crudification. C-R-U-D.
Yeah.
And what's happening is that rust and other contaminants, mostly rust, in the gas tank are ultimately finding their way to the pump.
Aha.
And clogging up the pump. And that's why it requires that you bang on it, perhaps, that it's just plugged up with debris.
Maybe if they cleaned out the gas tank.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that might be your next step, to take out the gas tank and either clean it or replace it.
Boy, that's a great suggestion.
So, yeah. And I think the way to find this out,
yeah.
too, is to take a sample of the gasoline.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, this tank may even have a drain plug on it.
Got it.
And drain some into a glass bottle and let it sit and see how many rocks and screwdrivers and fish hooks or whatever you find
yeah.
at the bottom of
and
the bottle.
Fish. And fish.
Okay, that's a great suggestion, Tom and Ray. I thank you very, very much.
All right, Christo.
I really enjoy your show.
Thanks.
Nice talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
He was very thankful.
He was, until he tries it. It doesn't work. They all.
It's amazing
how adoration can turn to hate with one piece of bad advice. But hey,
well,
it's a chance you take.
See, but we're using the reverse of the very incident that I just described here. People don't expect much when they tune into the show.
No, and any little morsel they get.
Any little morsel, they're eternally grateful.
Yeah, because
we've come to expect too much because the automobile manufacturers have given us too much.
Absolutely.
That's right.
And we've had too much, and it's time to come back to Earth.
Time to come back to Earth. Exactly right.
One,
we are the new paradigm. One out of ten. It starts 1 out of 10 times, happy as a clam.
1-888-CARS.
Every time I get home at night, I made it! Think
don't,
that way.
Don't you live in fear that you're going to turn the key in your MG and hear that sound of the starter locking against the flywheel?
I don't care anymore.
You don't care anymore because you know how to fix it.
I know how to fix it.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255.
What I am afraid of is that it's going to rain. Yeah. I don't know how to fix that. No. Now, who's this?
This is Melissa in Washington, D.C.
Hi, Melissa.
D.C.
Yeah.
Are you a politician or a lawyer?
No.
Okay. Are you aspiring to be one?
No.
Okay. But are you married to one?
Nope.
Do you want to be married to one?
No.
That's not strong enough. You should have said absolutely not. Hang up. So, Melissa.
Around here, my chances might be limited to one of those, though.
It might be. So,
well,
move
maybe.
Out of town as fast as you can. What's up?
Well, I actually have been cheering every time I got home recently because I've been driving with my door tied shut.
Ah.
I have a 1988 Honda.
That's
Accord.
A new movie, isn't it? Door tied shut?
Should be.
Tom Cruise.
Well, you know, that does bring you back to your roots. I mean, everyone should at one point in his or her life drive.
It's humiliating.
No, it's good.
It really makes it
grounds one.
Yes, it does.
It does, and everyone should do that.
And getting into contorted positions in the grocery store parking lot to get in and out the passenger side door.
Yeah, especially if you have a stick
really
shift.
Bad.
What kind of a car do you have?
It's an 88 Honda Accord.
What do you have it tied to, the back door?
It's really, I don't even want to tell you, it's tied from the seat, like the neckrest, to the seatbelt. Like the seat
I
belt.
Love it!
And it's hanging open, actually, half the time, too, because I can't get it tied tight enough.
So the dome really light's tight. On all the time. You have to take the fuse out for that. The thing's going ding, ding, ding. The seatbelt's dragging on the ground.
Yeah, the beeping has been very, very challenging. I've been driving from Annapolis to D.C., back and forth each day.
Oh,
and
great.
Listening to the beeping the whole time.
Yeah, and this happened because of an accident.
No, it didn't happen because of an accident. Oh. I bought the car used 2 years ago, and the door always didn't really close straight, but it wasn't too bad. And after 2 years of slamming it shut, it's kind of, I guess it's worn out the
latch.
Hinges.
Yeah, you may have worn out the latch, and the hinges may be all worn out, so the doors sag down even more.
And the latch is kind of actually the metal is almost ripped out of the screws.
You know
what I mean?
Geez.
It doesn't look good.
Well, you've got to fix it because this is very dangerous.
I know. That's why I always feel like when I'm going faster on a corner that the door is going to get enough momentum to swing open and pull the seat out with it because
it's tied to the seat.
To the seat.
Yeah, and so are you.
I know.
So are you. Wow.
I know. That's the problem.
Yeah. No,
so how long have you been driving with the rope?
Well, I haven't been driving that long because my boyfriend was actually driving. He drove with it for 3 weeks because his truck was broken down, so I took the bus and he used my car. So I've only been doing it for 2 weeks.
Ah.
What do you do in Washington, D.C.?
I work at a magazine publisher.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh. And your boyfriend?
He's sort of a scientist. He works out in Maryland on doing experiments on the rivers of the bay.
No, never mind.
On pigeons?
What?
We don't need to know any more about him. That's enough. Okay.
Except for the few we take home to experiment.
Working on the riverbanks. Okay.
All right.
Well, I was just curious. I mean, I had no real reason
Melissa,
for that.
Melissa, how much rust is on this car?
Not much at all.
Yeah.
Got it.
What do you think?
You could obviously try to fix it yourself, but without the benefit of seeing it, it's going to be tough for us to recommend what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
You could take it to a body shop, and there are body shops and there are body shops. There are some that will do a job and make it work, make it functionally okay, but not make the thing aesthetically pleasing.
Uh-huh.
So they may have to go at the door with hammers and chisels and whatever to get it to close. And it may be ugly when they're done, but it may be perfectly safe and functional.
Uh-huh.
And then there are body shops that'll do everything correctly.
Uh-huh.
And so you'll have
to stay away from them.
Okay.
You may want to stay away from them. Then there's always welding. You could weld the door shut.
No, I don't want to use the passenger's door anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if I would recommend having your boyfriend do it, because you're never going to trust that it's going to work.
There will always be this lingering doubt, is this the turn on which the door, no, right now, don't forget.
Right.
The door is at least tied shut.
Yeah.
After he fixes it and pronounces it fixed, you'll have to rely on his ability solely to keep the door closed.
Right.
And I'll tell you, the fear and the anxiety will gnaw away at you to the point where you will never, ever again make a right-hand turn.
He's been pretty good in the past, though.
Well, he's a sort of scientist, and you can't trust them. They're too theoretical, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, once they think they have the explanation for something, they refuse to
They keep
to
saying,
be...
well, it should have worked,
yeah,
and I'm
going to
miss Melissa. But there are more people, more fish in the sea, he'll say, and goodbye, Melissa.
Here's
so
what you do, I think. You take it to a body shop and ask them to give you an estimate. If they tell you they can fix it for $100,
uh-huh,
fix it. If they tell you, look, it needs a new door,
uh-huh,
well, then your boyfriend can do that.
Okay.
You can buy a door and unbolt the old one and put the new one on. Of course, it'll be a different color.
Right.
And if you haven't already destroyed the latch and the striker, you may be able to get by. But you can go to a junkyard and buy all that stuff.
Yeah.
Off a functioning 88 Accord.
Uh-huh. And there's probably lots of those.
And there may be lots of those in the junkyard.
Or just swap to the whole car.
Right.
You see a nice 88 Accord with the door on it, say, I'll give you $50 for the door and the car that it's attached to.
Yeah.
And I'll give you my car in return. But do fix this, because what you're doing now is dangerous.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if there were to be an accident and the crew was trying to extricate you and the door doesn't open because you get it tied to the headrest, that's no good.
Yeah, that's not good.
I mean,
okay.
See you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Get
guys.
Right on this.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
See
ya.
But it does... See, now duct tape is a real good thing to tie a door. All right, Tommy, take a look at the clock over there.
Yeah.
Where's the big hand?
It's coming up on the 8.
And what does that mean to you?
Oh, it means I just got a parking ticket. Maybe it's not too late. Can I borrow 16 quarters from you?
Flake off, exhaust breath. Look, we'll be back after a short break with more of your car questions, so please stay tuned.
We'll be right back.
I wish my dog could drive. Hey, I wish my dog could drive. If my dog could drive, we'd take a trip down New Orleans where the music's hip. I'd sit back and ride if my dog could drive. If my dog could drive.
And even though hyenas complain we give laughing a bad name whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a dentist and want to remind your patients there are things more painful than a root canal.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and creative writing 101.
I mean, this is a perfect example of why the whole world is hopeless. It's hopeless. This is a presumably real from SMU in-class assignment for Wednesday. Today we'll experiment with a new form called the tandem story. Each person will pair off with the person sitting to his or her immediate right. One of you will then write the first paragraph of a short story. The partner will read the first paragraph and add another paragraph to the story. Then the first person will add a third paragraph and so on back and forth, okay?
Yeah, it's kind of like how we do our show.
Exactly. Here we go. The first person writes, at first, Laurie couldn't decide which kind of tea she wanted. The chamomile, which used to be her favorite for lazy evenings at home, now reminded her too much of Carl, who once said in happier times that he liked chamomile. But she felt she must now at all costs keep her mind off Carl. His possessiveness was suffocating, and if she thought about him too much, her asthma started acting up again. So chamomile was out of the question. Okay, so far, so good. She hands this over to the guy next to her.
To Butch, the guy sitting next to her.
Meanwhile, Advanced Sergeant Carl Harris, leader of the attack squadron, now in orbit over Skylon 4, had more important things to think about than the neurosis of an airheaded asthmatic bimbo named Laurie, with whom he had spent one sweaty night over a year ago. A.S. Harris to Geostation 17, he said into his transgalactic communicator. Polar orbit established, no sign of resistance so far. But before he could sign off, a bluish particle beam flashed out of nowhere and blasted a hole through his ship's cargo bay. The jolt from the direct hit sent him flying out of his seat and across the cockpit. Hands it back there. He bumped his head and died almost immediately, but not before he felt one last pang of regret for psychically brutalizing the one woman who had ever had feelings for him. Soon afterwards, Earth stopped its pointless hostilities towards the peaceful farmers of Skylon 4. Congress passes law permanently abolishing war and space travel, Laurie read in her newspaper one morning. The news simultaneously excited her and bored her. She stared out the window, dreaming of her youth when the days had passed unhurriedly and carefree, with no newspapers to read, no television to distract her. Back to him. Little did she know she had less than 10 seconds to live. Thousands of miles above the city, the Anu Udrian mothership launched the first of its lithium fusion missiles. I mean, this goes on and on, but I mean, it's hopeless, isn't it? It's hopeless.
Well, that pairing is certainly hopeless.
Well, I wonder how unlike most communication, even between husband and wife. I mean, your wife is talking, I think I'll have chamomile tea. Meanwhile, Master Sergeant.
Well, it just proves that most people are in their own world.
the truth.
And they don't want to be in yours.
Wow.
Lithium, what was that?
Lithium fusion missiles.
Ooh, I like them.
Little did she know, she had less than 10 seconds to live.
Those lithium fusion missiles will be raining down upon her. Okay, so while talking about lithium fusion missiles,
yeah,
if you have a question about creative writing or creative auto repair, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is John from Wilmington, Delaware.
Hi, John.
Hi, John. What's happening, man?
Well, I have an 88 Volvo 740 turbo intercooler, and they're...
You just have the intercooler, or do you have the whole car?
You have the whole car.
I have the whole car, and that's what it says on the back of the car.
It does, and yeah. I always found that interesting that they thought they should mention a piece of the car.
Okay.
And the piece they chose to mention was the turbo intercooler. I mean, it could have said Volvo 740 cigarette lighter. Just the same thing,
wouldn't
right?
Wouldn't be as catchy, though.
It wouldn't be as catchy.
So anyway, what's going on with your intercooler?
There are two problems, and they may or may not be related. The main problem is when I'm sitting at a light or even in the driveway and idle, the tachometer will drop from roughly 1,000 RPMs down to 400 RPMs, and the car will shake, and the turbo gauge will go along with it. And then a few seconds later, it'll bounce back up and be normal for a minute.
Okay.
And then do it again.
And does this happen every time you're at idle?
Every time.
But it doesn't happen until the thing is warmed up.
No, it happens immediately.
Okay, good enough.
And the second symptom, which may or may not be related, is this sound that is always there when I'm at idle that sounds like a can of uncooked rice shaking in the front left corner of the car.
Uncooked rice shaking. Wow. A can of uncooked rice.
Yeah.
A can. I've never put rice in a can.
Not a jar. A can.
Yeah.
So I got it.
I've never heard uncooked rice in a can before, but I can imagine what it sounds like.
And it's not a lot of rice, right? It's only like 3 or 4 cloves or whatever you call those things.
Grains.
That's it.
No, it is a lot of rice.
You know, it's a lot of rice.
Yeah.
And have you ever investigated it?
Well, yeah, I've opened my hood with the car in the driveway, and I can't tell where it's coming from. I can't see anything.
Oh, so then you'll believe just about anything.
Yeah, probably.
But you specified it as the front left.
Yes, it's definitely the front left.
The left meaning the driver's side.
Correct.
And the front meaning the front of the car.
Correct.
Nothing there but a headlight.
Well, it could be the headlight.
Let's decide in advance if the two problems are related, and then we can decide on whether we need two answers or only one. I'm going to say they're unrelated.
Okay. Go ahead. Let's run with it.
Let's run with it.
Well, yeah. I don't know what the can of rice is. I think I'm going to question your ability to, considering that you haven't gone any farther in so far as pinpointing the exact location of it, then I'm going to dismiss your accuracy.
Okay.
And I think that the noise is coming from a bad water pump bearing or something like that, which could easily sound like it's coming from any part of the front of the car.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you say, let me ask one other question. You hear this rattling with the rice.
Yes.
But also you say that the idle is varying between 400 RPM and 1,000 RPM.
Yeah.
When it gets up to 1,000 for those few moments or seconds, does the rice noise go away?
No, the rice noise is always there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the surging is caused by a lean mixture.
Okay.
Either that or you have a faulty oxygen sensor, but you're saying that it happens right from the
From the get-go, it ain't the oxygen sensor.
Well, it could be.
It could be.
It could be.
It could be.
This might have a heated oxygen sensor. And if it does, then it could affect it. And you would have to unplug the oxygen sensor to see if you could make the problem go away.
So I'd need a book for that.
Well, you might need a book. But actually, if you could locate the wire for the oxygen sensor, is on the firewall on the other side of the car.
Other side from the rattling noise?
Yeah, exactly. It's diagonally opposite the rattling noise. And I don't know what the rattling noise is, but I think you have a bad water pump or something. Or a bad belt, even.
Well, that's good enough for me.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good enough for you, John?
If it's good enough for the two of you, it's good enough for me.
All right.
Well, I mean, the easy thing to do is have someone check the mixture and see if that clears it up.
I know what the noise is. It's a loose intercooler. Well, the intercooler's right up front there, you know.
I did take my cigarette lighter out to make sure it wasn't that.
All right.
Hey, good luck, John.
Okay.
See you, John.
Well, thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Sasha from Muir Woods.
Hi, from Muir Woods.
From Muir Woods. I live in Muir Woods.
You live in the woods?
In the woods. My dad's a ranger here.
No kidding.
No, really.
You know, that is one of the most beautiful spots on the planet.
Yeah, it is.
Now, explain my brother's behavior. When last we were in San Francisco, I said to him, Tommy, I want to take you to visit the Muir Woods.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to go.
I can't imagine why.
I had to take him kicking and screaming with a promise that he could get cappuccino there. He said, I ain't going unless there's a place where I can sit down and drink cappuccino. And I said, of course. I've been there many times. There's an espresso
bar all over the place.
Right in the woods. They have a guy that comes by with a little cart, you know. Cappuccino, sir?
Get your hot cappuccino here.
See the trees. Drink a cappuccino. He bitched the whole time. The ride up, which was like 7 minutes.
I mean,
and the whole time we were there, he couldn't get out of there fast enough.
Well, I mean, I did walk all the way down into
Here's what he did. He walked through the parking lot.
The parking lot.
He
was
walked
a big,
in
long
the parking lot.
Trail.
You can see a bunch of trees. He said, wow, these are big. Okay, let's go. Anyway,
I had a great time.
Yeah, none of us did.
Until that point.
Yeah, none of us had a great time.
But, I mean, I figured 20 minutes in the woods was plenty. And my brother says, well, no, just come with me. We got to go down this path. And 5 hours later, we're still in the woods trying to get back to the parking lot. I mean, five hours in the woods?
I was looking for the guy with the push cart.
And he kept saying, wow, look at that tree. And I said, I just saw that tree. It's the same as that one.
We saw it the last 4 times we went by
Come on. All right. Well, thanks for calling and reminding us of that little debacle. What's up, Sasha?
Okay, well, I'm 15, and I'm going to get my license soon. My dad's giving me a Honda Accord, and it's a stick. And I'm having the worst time in the world trying to drive it. And I was wondering if you guys had any advice in how I could get any better at it.
My brother is the world's foremost authority on teaching people to drive a stick shift car.
Really? Then I'm in luck.
You are in luck, except you're 3,000 miles away. But if your father wanted to pay my brother's way out there, my brother would be happy to come to the Muir Woods, and we here at the station would be happy if he went.
And stayed.
And stayed. You can keep him as long as you need him.
So do you know approximately how to drive? I mean, have you been behind the wheel of any other vehicle?
Yeah, I'm fine in automatic cars. It's just the clutch.
Then I would suggest that you try to, you obviously the difficult thing you're having is taking off from a dead stop.
Yeah.
And here's what I would tell you to do. If you can find a nice level road on which to drive, you should start by finding what's called the engagement point, where you lift the foot off the floor as quickly as you can, and yet not so quickly that you stall it, but your goal is to find the point where the clutch begins to grab.
Uh-huh.
And then once you reach that point, without touching the gas at all, see if you can let the clutch pedal out the rest of the way and actually get the car to move. And it'll move at 10, 15 miles an
without
hour.
Without stepping on the gas at all, forget there's a gas pedal.
Okay.
For a moment.
And you got to practice that 100 times or until you puke.
Okay.
Whichever comes second.
And once you've gotten that engagement point and you know you can find it, then you're ready to introduce gas. And what you merely do is when you find the engagement point, then you begin to give it some gas and you take off. And as you give it more gas, you let your foot off the clutch.
Uh-huh.
So the first movement from the floor to that engagement point, there's no gas ever.
Yeah. Okay.
And then once the car begins to move a little bit, you give it gas and you let the clutch the rest of the way out.
What is the problem that you're having, Sasha?
Well, I keep on popping the clutch, and, like, every time, like, my dad says he gets, like, whiplash from it.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, I just, it
sure.
jerks a lot. And it, you know, it's like, impossible, and my dad doesn't
want to
drive with me.
You got to do it really slowly.
You got to practice without the gas. I mean, that you got to do that, and literally, maybe for you, maybe 200 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best way to learn it, the other thing, the other piece of advice I'd give you mm-hmm. is to get in the car without your father.
Yeah. I think that'll work.
Yeah. I mean, like when he pulls over to throw up, just take off. And you'll learn in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You
okay.
know. In fact, my younger son learned in no time. He and I went for a ride. He already had his license. And we went for a ride, and it was awful. And I finally made him stop in front of the house, and I got out, and I said, go ahead. You figure it out. And a half hour later, he came back, and he was all set. So your father's presence in the car is the biggest problem, I think.
Well, I mean, the other piece of advice I would give you, I have a 16-year-old daughter who is also in the process of learning how to drive.
Uh-huh.
And the only other piece of advice, especially when you're driving stick shift, is forget about the bozo behind you.
That's what I'm always so worried about.
That's all. I mean, especially if you're a 15 or 16-year-old person, and especially a 15 or 16-year-old girl, you are very concerned about the impression that you are making on the person behind you.
Yes.
And that person is going to be so upset and disturbed. My advice is screw them. Because if they don't have the patience or the understanding to deal with someone who's learning to
drive. Well, first of all, they don't know you're a rookie driver. You need the thing in the window.
Well, first of all, most people have no patience whatsoever. As you know, if you've driven around any city,
yeah.
you come to a traffic light, and a nanosecond after it turns green, the jerk behind you is blowing the horn. And imagine what happens if you start off and you stall the car. Then the person behind you is going to go postal. And I had the same problem recently when I had my MG, which had a very strange clutch so that it was almost impossible to start off from a dead stop without stalling the vehicle. And especially if you're heading up a small incline.
Yeah.
And I finally adopted the following strategy. I would do my very best to not stall the car.
All right.
And every time I did stall, it was a nanosecond before the guy behind me blew the horn. So I made it a point to not step on the brake so that when I did stall the car, my car rolled back and smashed into his car. And I would, of course, then have to get out and look to make sure that everything was okay.
Change
during
papers.
Which time the traffic light went through several iterations of red, green, red, green, red, green. And then I would try it again. And if he still blew the horn, I would make sure I stalled and roll back and smash into him again. And that's what I would advise for you, because forget about those people.
Yeah. Okay.
Good luck, kid.
I'm sure someday you'll be a wonderful driver and you'll hopefully forget all this.
Okay, thank you so much.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, look, it's time for us to take a little break.
Just how little? I mean, do I have time to write personalized thank you notes to each and every one of our loyal listeners? That kind of a break?
Ashley, there's no rush. They're both doing life.
Stay tuned. I have great mail when we come back in just a minute.
Back on me again. kind of funny noise. Sounds like 16 screaming boys getting chased by a pack of wolves inside a cage. It sounds like a whole swarm of killer bees. Well, straight up the preacher's sleeves. Now tell me, do you think that's safe? And they say, can you make that sound? Can you make that sound for me? We can't tell you what's been going wrong unless we know this thing of dawn. Can you make that sound? Can you make that sound for me?
And even though Malyotis everywhere think to themselves, you know, Smith has a nice ring to it whenever they hear us say it. This is NPR.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and
I've got some interesting mail. Would you like me to read it to you?
Sure.
Hey, come on. I listen to your stupid puzzlers every week. Okay.
Go ahead. Read us something.
This is a bunch of stuff. They ask kids various questions having to do with marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And they got answers from little kids. I mean, these are kids like 5 to 10 years old. And I'll read you just a few of them. Here's the question they asked. How do you decide who to marry? Alan, age 10, says, you've got to find somebody who likes the same stuff. Like if you like sports, she should like it that you like sports. And she should keep the chips and dip coming. How can a stranger tell if two people are married? This is good. Derek, age 8, says, you might have to guess based on whether they seem to be yelling at the same kids. What do most people do on a date? Lynette, age 8, says dates are for having fun, and people should use them to get to know each other. Even boys have something to say if you listen long enough. And my favorite, how would you make a marriage work? Ricky, age 10. You should tell your wife that she looks pretty, even if she looks like a truck.
Okay.
Okay. I do that. Now, did I have to throw that in?
No, that was entirely
unnecessary.
Entirely unnecessary. It's a classic example of pushing something to the limit, right?
I don't know what
you
came.
Just couldn't keep your mouth shut.
I don't know what came over me.
If you have something my brother might like to read or something that he can get himself in trouble with, please feel free to send him anything, including fresh fish. And the address is Good Mail Division, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, that's 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
Matt 02238, or you can email him from cartalk.com. Just click on the send fish icon. If you'd like to call us with a question about your car or anything else, or marital advice. My brother is pretty liberal with his marital advice.
Yeah.
The number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
A truck?
Oh, no! My worst fears!
A truck?
My worst fears!
See? You never know.
That wasn't me.
Uh-huh.
That was Berman who sneaked into the studio and leaned over my shoulder.
And faked Tommy's voice.
And faked my voice. Hi, hon.
Uh-huh.
Hi, hon. What's for dinner tonight? I guess not much.
You'll be lucky if you get a dog food the way you're going.
Will it be the wet or the dry stuff?
He likes the dry, Jane.
I'm really sick of the wet stuff.
Well, we'll see what we can scrape together. But don't expect too much.
Bye, hon.
Bye.
I guess I'll be seeing you from the garage.
Oh, yeah. You'll be waving to them from the garage. They'll be having a wonderful time without you. See, I keep telling you.
I hate you.
I keep telling you.
Well, see, my only hope, I know for a fact that she never listens to our show.
Yeah. Evidently, rarely. Once in a while, huh?
And everyone's, I mean, maybe, I know that many of her friends come to her and say,
I can't believe your husband said that about you.
And she keeps saying, what? What did he say? And then when her friends find out that she doesn't know, they say, oh, nothing.
Right.
So, but she's gotten the hint that she should be listening, and maybe that's why she was listening.
I think she'll probably be listening today. from now on.
She won't have to. No, she won't know me.
No. 1-888-CAR-TALK. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, how you doing?
Good. Great. Who's this?
Kevin. I'm from Stillwell, Kansas.
Hi, Kevin.
Where, Kansas? Stool?
Stillwell.
Stillwell.
S-T-I-L-W-E-L-L.
Are you sick? No, I'm still well.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I have a question. I'm actually from Connecticut. We moved here 3 years ago, so we're still getting used to the tornado factor.
No
moved
kidding.
From hurricane and snowstorms to tornadoes, and I have a question about that I thought you might be able to help with.
Yeah, we have degrees in meteorology and
Scientology.
And Scientology. So we can answer that, yeah.
Okay. We have a raised ranch house, so that ends up with a foundation around three sides and then a garage on one end.
Yeah.
And I thought putting driving my car into the garage, I thought that might be a good storm shelter. So you're in the house, in the car. And some of the benefits I thought to that were safety belt, having access to the radio, debris protection if something happened.
Oh, it's kind of good. It's good thinking.
My wife thinks it's crazy.
Yeah, well, she's probably right.
Yeah. You came up with this idea all by yourself?
Right. I've never heard anybody else reference
it. She's right.
Do the disaster specialists agree with you? You don't know because
never,
no one's
never
ever
heard anybody reference it.
No one ever recommended it.
Never.
I mean, the question is, if you were simply in the garage, would it be any safer or less safe? I mean, if what's going to happen? If you're in the garage and the house is going to fall on top of you.
No, the house is probably likely to get sucked away from you. The garage, correct me if I'm wrong, but the garage has concrete walls.
On two sides, except for the door
side. On two sides.
Right.
On one.
The fourth side is the door.
Is the door.
And the fifth side is access to the basement.
Right.
Exactly.
Under what let's think about what circumstances it would be useful in. If you were in the garage by yourself and the house blew away, you would probably blow away with it, and that would be bad. Or debris would come and fall on your head, and you'd be dead. So I think you're right. I mean, if you're in the car, first of all, the likelihood of getting blown away is reduced because the car weighs more than you do.
Right.
Unless, of course, you're my wife and you look like a truck.
There you go.
I think it was that blueberry pie. So the question is, if the car's going to get blown away, then you're in trouble. But I think the car getting blown away from down there in the garage, because it is like going to be like buried.
It is
to
protected,
some extent.
I'm sure, to some extent.
I like your idea,
I mean, I think
Kevin.
You should consult with the local experts on this. But I'm going to suggest one other thing that you might suggest to the experts, that you fashion some kind of tie-downs.
Ooh, for your car.
Yes.
So every day you bring the car in, hook it up.
Hook it up.
I mean, if there were a tornado, you don't care about the car blowing away, except when you're in it.
Right.
So if there were a tornado warning, for example.
You would
run to your car, throw these straps.
The chains.
Over the car.
No, they have chains. Go right around the axles or something, to the concrete.
Chain to the floor.
Yeah.
So that your car couldn't get pulled away.
Well, some of these storms come up fast. I mean, honestly, you might not have time to set something like that up.
Well, I mean, you could hook it up so that every time you drove in, it happened automatically.
The Batcave.
Like
the Bat Cave.
There you go.
And then you have one of those little remote switches things. You press the button and it deactivates.
Yeah. I mean, alternatively, you could just move back to Connecticut. You know, that works.
It could be.
But it just goes to show that you are thinking, Kevin. You are thinking. And that's
right.
Good.
And in spite of what your wife says, we don't think you're a wacko.
Well, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Kevin.
Good
Thank
luck.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
He's nuts.
You didn't even give the guy a chance to hang up.
Oh. I'm sorry. It slipped out.
Kev, are you still there? Oh, God.
Is my wife on?
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 552-872-2888. Backwards. Hello, you're on CAR-TALK.
Backwards now. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, who's this?
This is Diana from Mishawak, Indiana.
Hi, Diana. How are you?
Mishawaka.
Mishawaka.
Oh, yes.
Indiana?
Uh-huh.
Got it.
Got it. Okay, what's up?
We have a 1985 Dodge van, and it is producing a smell that, if bottled, could probably be a new germ warfare.
Wait,
really?
You said a van.
This is like a B-150 van or something. This is a full-size van.
Right, three-quarter ton.
Yeah, okay.
It has 170,000 miles on it.
Okay, I'm with you.
And it's got the carburetor, standard Chrysler electronic ignition, no computer.
Good.
V8 engine.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Now, this occurs about 20 to 30 minutes after a prolonged idle period or 15 minutes tops on the open road.
Mm-hmm.
And this smell is like nothing you have ever smelled. It comes on slowly, but it could eliminate the mosquito population as we know it.
So if it is nothing like a smell we've ever experienced, how are you going to describe it to us?
What's the closest thing in our experience to it?
Is it like rotten eggs?
On a scale of 1 to 10, rotten eggs would be a 1.
Would be Chanel number 5. Okay.
And it's like a nauseating sewer gas smell.
Okay. Have you ever been in an enclosed area with my brother?
No.
Is it like that?
No, it's not like that, but
that would be a 7 on your scale.
Now, I'm in trouble, guys. Yeah. I definitely need your help
here.
Jeez,
what could this be?
And was the onset of this abrupt?
That's exactly right.
And has it abated at all?
Well, here is the mystery. This is why I'm depending on you guys, because it really is a mystery. First of all, we just checked everything. We've gone through tune-up. Everything's been changed. Spark plugs, wires, distributor, rotor. It had a compression test. Everything.
How about smog test? Do you have a smog test or an emissions test in Indiana, or don't you care? About the planet
Indiana
that you live on.
No, they just pull it. You pull it into the farmyard and see how many hogs keel over.
Right. And at the present time, I could wipe out an entire farm.
This might be like a 10 hogger.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, that's how they measure it on a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah.
The number of hogs that keel over.
Oh, right.
And they put the little symbols
the
on
little symbol on your, on your windshield. 3 hogs.
That's exactly right.
6 hogs.
Oh, God.
Well, there goes a state.
But now, guys, I got a clue for you.
Yeah.
At 49,000 miles, they put in a fish oil additive into my transmission oil.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe it?
Oh.
Well, yeah.
Ooh, I got it.
Ooh.
Oh,
I got it.
Do you really?
I got it.
You're going to ask her the one question that's going to pull it right out. Is that it?
Yeah.
You're going to say to her something like you said.
I got it.
Sometimes you say, when was the accident?
Right.
Or you're going to say,
when would you like the accident to be?
Yeah. Did you have the radiator replaced?
Here's the question. How often do you add automatic transmission fluid to it?
Never. That was the only
Would you like to reconsider?
No, that wasn't a good question.
Well, that is a good question because this fish oil additive.
But now, the additive was put in at 49,000 miles, and I have over 170 on it.
That ain't it.
No, it isn't.
Nah.
Well, all right, well,
it's a horrible, disgusting, like, garbagey smell.
But you cannot pinpoint the smell. I mean, it's not coming out of the tailpipe.
No, and they did an entire...
Yeah.
Check on our exhaust system. There's no leaks.
So this seems to just envelop the whole vehicle.
Oh, totally.
And where it's coming from is the outside of the exhaust system. For example, if you had driven over a skunk whose guts got on the exhaust system, like the catalytic converter and the exhaust pipes, then every time the thing heated up and reached that critical temperature, you would put more of this aroma into the air surrounding your vehicle.
But now we put a new exhaust system on it.
Oops.
Everything new.
There goes that.
Well, you didn't replace everything. You didn't go all the way from the engine. You put the muffler and tailpipe on it.
He's struggling.
I bet you didn't replace the converter.
No, they didn't replace the converter.
No.
But
no,
if there was something wrapped around it, you don't...
Here's what my original...
Dead aardvark lying there on the... And the guy doesn't notice it?
Well, an aardvark you might notice. But here was my original theory.
Okay.
That one of the transmission cooler lines is actually leaking a small amount of transmission fluid onto the hot exhaust pipes.
That's why I thought you were going to ask her, when did you replace the radiator?
No, it's leaking right where the cooler lines run.
To the radiator.
They run to the radiator, but they cross over the Y pipe, which is the pipe that connects to the engine.
I'm beginning to like this.
That ultimately leads to the catalytic converter. And I bet you that's where the smell is coming from. And this fish guts that you put in, it may be that it is leaking out one little drop at a time.
It takes a drop.
From one of those transmission cooler lines, and it's getting onto the hot exhaust pipe, and that's making the spell. I'd almost stake my brother's life on it.
Okay.
Here's the way to do it, very simply.
Stick your nose under there, you'll know.
Pull out your dipstick, okay?
Right.
And with the engine hot, in other words, the car's been running, put a drop of this on the hot tailpipe.
Okay.
And you should immediately get the smell, which you are so familiar with.
Okay.
And you will know then to go look for a leak from one of your transmission cooler lines.
Okay.
So I think that's it, Diana.
I like it. I like it.
It sounds terrific.
It was a struggle. You were difficult.
Well, I have to force you to come up with the most creative and most credible, be they BS or not, answers.
You guys, this is terrific.
I have no problem coming up with answers. It's
getting them past the censor.
It's the explanations that have always been my downfall. But I think I may have hit it here.
Great.
Good luck, Diana.
Thanks so much, guys.
Bye.
Okay,
she's going to be on Stump the Chump.
Oh, no.
Because that's bogus.
They're going to call into her already.
Oh, my God. While you've wasted an otherwise perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk, our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producer is David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the scenic route, bean sprout, brook trout, pig snout, sauerkraut, and Guinness stout, anti-gout, pig out, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our director of guaranteed repeat business is Lucinda Bolts. Our dessert menu planner is Eaton Flanagan. Our tolerance quality control guy is Nat Sass. Our director of staff promotions is Anita Butkus. Our rafting guide is Euphrates Rapids. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horse She Rode In. And the head of our Working Mother Support Group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the schwitzing tourists in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
And don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1031, promenade through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, you might have missed Car Talk in the newspapers recently.
Is that little embezzlement issue thing?
No.
What, was NPR advertising us free to a good home?
No. We've been featured in the funny pages.
Oh, as opposed to the funny-looking pages.
Yeah. A number of cartoonists over the years have referenced Car Talk, and we collected them all for your browsing pleasure.
So this is everything from the lowbrow, like the New Yorker,
yeah,
to the classy stuff like Zippy the Pinhead.
Yeah, exactly. Comic renditions of Car Talk on the homepage all week at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the NPR doorman mutters something about the doorknob and the way out every time he hears us say it, this is NPR.